TDLR is responsible for the administration of the elimination of architectural barriers in Texas. And it's composed of three components. One is the law, which is Chapter 469 of the Government Code. Then there are the rules set by TDLR, which are found under Chapter 68 of their administrative rules. And then there's the 2012 TAS, which became effective March 15th, 2012. There are some safe harbor provisions that refer sometimes back to the previous standards, but anything that's being built currently is being built under the 2012 TAS. And TDLR has issued some technical memorandums for clarification, so you want to be sure that you might understand those as well. The law itself requires that plans and specifications be submitted, whether it be new construction or a substantial alteration, for buildings or facilities that are subject to the law. And they have to be submitted for the plan review and the inspection process if the construction cost is $50,000 or more. An alteration is defined actually in the rules as a renovation, modification, change to a building or facility that affects the usability of the building. Re-roofing, wallpapering, changes to mechanical and electrical systems are not subject unless they actually have an impact on the usability of the building. And the estimated construction cost is also defined, and it includes all construction costs, including mechanical and electrical equipment of the buildings. But it does not include things like site acquisition, architect's fees, and other types of systems if they're not mechanical systems connected with the building. The one thing to remember about the Texas law is it's a construction law, whereas the ADA is a civil rights law. Texas law only is impacted when you do construction, whereas ADA also applies to existing buildings. Subject buildings. They're actually defined in the law itself. It's a publicly funded building that's renovated or modified. A public funded building is one that utilizes public funds. An example would be a school, a publicly funded school. A building or facility described in this subsection that is used on a temporary basis. Those could be something like your temporary classrooms. You'll see sometimes these temporary medical screening facilities, temporary sales offices are examples of temporary buildings. So it does cover those as well. It covers a building that's leased or occupied in whole or in part by the state. It's privately funded facilities as defined as a public accommodation by the ADA. Privately funded means that it has only private funds in it. And a public accommodation means that you invite the public in. Or a privately funded building used with private funds as defined as a commercial facility. That may be a facility that you don't invite the public in, but commerce takes place in that facility. Exemptions. These are actually exempt from the Texas Architectural Barriers Act. Federally owned or operated, owned or leased by the federal government. Places used primarily for the religious rituals, residential facilities, and then van accessible parking at garages constructed prior to 1994. The religious exemption only applies to the area where the religious worship takes place. It would not apply to parking. It would not apply to accessible routes. It would not apply to maybe a fellowship hall if the actual ritual of worship does not take place there. And the federal things are not covered because they're actually covered by the architectural by the federal government under their different agencies. Who is required to submit for the plans? If there's a registered architect, interior designer, landscape architect, those are the persons that are required to submit. If they're not involved in that, if there's not a licensed design professional, then it falls to the owner to submit. And the owner is actually defined, and I'm going to read that one for you. It's the person or company, corporation, authority, board, governmental agent, entity, institution, or any other entity that holds title to the subject building. A tenant is not the owner. So it always comes back to the owner, and that's the person or entity that holds title to the property. And then the owner can designate an agent, which sometimes happens. Either they might designate the architect to act on his behalf. They may have it in their tenant-landlord agreement that the tenant has to act on his behalf. But he has to sign a form. The owner has to sign a form naming somebody if they're going to use an agent. But the key thing to remember, the owner does not sign his rights or obligations away. He can only have somebody act in his behalf. He is still responsible for compliance.